The labyrinth has been part of pop culture for thousands of years, and I don't just mean the Greek concept. Just imagine being in a maze, running from a creature that's just as mindless as the ones in the forest. It just wants to eat you. But it's also magical, a little mystical. The Minotaur, right? You end up with this beast that is, it's almost immortal. It's got more lives than Freddy and Jason put together. I mean, it's supposed to have been dispatched thousands of years ago, and we still talk about it today. But, I mean, myths are fun though, right? Of course that's true, but maybe there's more to this story than we previously thought. Last year there was a find on Crete so similar to the labyrinth described in the story that the archaeologists investigating the site felt compelled to make the comparison, and they want to fully excavate the site, which is not a position normally held by archaeologists, as many of you will be aware. So let's talk about the new find that they've got on Crete. Hi, my name's Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Okay, here's a Cliff Notes breakdown of the story of the Minotaur in the labyrinth. The king of Crete, some dude named Minos, begged the sea god Poseidon to hook him up with some fancy magic bull to prove that Minos and Poseidon were buddies. Poseidon agreed, but he demanded the bull as a sacrifice after Minos got to show it off. Minos agreed to this, but the bull was a really good-looking sight of beef. So good-looking, Minos decided to keep it to himself and sacrifice another bull instead. You know, we're all red on the inside, Minos thought to himself, and he sacrificed that bull, and it wasn't quite as gorgeous as the one Poseidon provided, and the god didn't really like this. So he got even in a way that makes me think that he was probably a 4chan regular. He used his magic god powers to make Minos' wife, Pasiphae, find the bull even more awesome looking than Minos did. In fact, she went all the way to, "That is a sexy sight of beef right there." She had some guy named Daedalus, who must have been the biggest perv on the island, make her a fake cow body to hide in. It was made out of wood and covered in cow hides, and then she hid in a field, with Daedalus probably watching with his pants down. And eventually the bull found the fake cow and mated with it, and Pasiphae got pregnant. Sometime later, she gave birth to the Minotaur, this mindless half-man, half-bull, and that was placed in the labyrinth and fed people that the Athenians were said to have sent as tribute for getting their butts kicked by the Minoans. These unfortunates would be placed in the labyrinth, only to eventually be eaten by the Minotaur. Eventually, Theseus, an Athenian prince, went and kicked the half-man, half-beast's butt and ended the reign of terror. Of course, there's many more details to the story, but this gives us enough information that we can cover the recent find. In northern Crete, at a place called Papora Hill, they discovered this large round building. It was discovered during the groundwork for construction of a new radar station for the Heraklion Airport. Sure I pronounced that right. With a diameter of about 157 feet, the structure covers over 19,000 square feet and was said to have been used for about 300 years steadily, starting around 4,000 years ago. The site is very labyrinthy, with an interior that is separated into rooms without connecting halls, and a center circle enclosed with four sections separated by a cross-shaped wall. The exterior is made of 8 concentric stone walls laid out in circles, with the highest surviving wall clocking in at 5.5 feet. Most of what we know we've learned from pottery, and that tells us the site was constructed at around 2000 BC, used regularly for about 300 years, and then used intermittently up until its destruction about 400 years later. What's really interesting is this style of construction is unique on the island of Crete as far as they know. The Minoan timeline is divided into four periods: pre-palatial, proto-palatial, neo-palatial, and post-palatial periods, with the pre-palatial lasting over 1,000 years and the others each a few hundred years long. The pottery places the construction of the site in the proto-palatial period, and the majority of pottery is from this period, but there is some neo-palatial pottery found at the layer where the destruction of the site occurred. And this is why they say the site was probably used intermittently up until it was destroyed. And they also think that it was mostly a ceremonial center and not a place where people lived. To quote the Minister of Culture, Lisa Mendoni, "The quantity and type of findings, as well as the presence of a large quantity of animal remains, do not indicate continuous residential use to date, but probably periodic use as a form of ritual events, possibly involving the consumption of food, wine, and perhaps offerings. This is the first monument of this type to be identified and excavated in Crete. Its size, architectural structure, and meticulous construction require significant work, specializing experience, and a strong central administration which organized the construction. What is certain is that this is some sort of community building, a landmark for the wider Pedaea area. The fact that this structure is monumental and prominent probably indicates the importance of the location, but also the range of the population it would serve." Now, like she said, this is a unique style of construction on the island of Crete, but we do see this type of building in other Minoan settlements and other Bronze Age cultures in Mesopotamia, usually involving tombs. The round structure with reinforced exterior walls and a maze-like interior are rare but not unique. Normally these are funerary structures, but this seems to be more of a ceremonial center of sorts. With animal bones all over the place, the assumption that this was a place of celebration makes sense. But what about the details in these ceremonies? Maybe they're not so benign. Maybe they involved ritualized combat, or sacrifice, or even the eating of your prisoners. The ritual sacrifice and even the consumption of younger humans on the island of Crete has been debated since 1979, when historian Peter Warren located the bones of multiple children in the ancient city of Knossos on Crete. Since then, at least four different sites on Crete have been presented as evidence of this kind of ritual activity, I guess you could say. The debate is centered on the marks on the bones. As usual, interpretations are far from science, it's just guesswork here. Marks on some bones look like butcher marks to some, others look like ceremonial blows maybe, not random strikes. In short, we don't have a clear consensus here. But many scholars do believe that the Minoans would engage in this sort of activity as a last resort when things really weren't going their way. In fact, one of the proposed sacrifices looks to have been made in response to a major earthquake, and another earthquake seems to have interrupted the ceremony, actually slaying two of the people performing the ritual and forcing it to end prematurely. I bet Poseidon's still pissed about the bull, and he did it. The reason this is worth mentioning is one of the possible sources for the Minotaur myth is ritual sacrifice of Athenian youths. If they were devoured, possibly right there in that circular maze at Pepora Hill, this would explain the myth, including the eating of its victims and the labyrinth. Now, it's important to note that the story that we have of the Minotaur and the labyrinth is purely an Athenian myth. We don't get it from anybody else. And if you look at the content of that myth, it kind of makes sense. You know, the Athenians and the Minoans were not friends. And for a long time, the Athenians were under the Minoans. The competition for control of the Mediterranean was pretty intense, and the Minoans seemed to have valued nature and animism more than the Athenians, who were focused more on philosophy and government. And this difference in values could show up in the story as a natural evolution, a way to underline this difference without getting into a big lecture or a YouTube video. But that's only one explanation, and this really doesn't address why it has a bull in this story. The bull may well have been derived from the constellation Taurus. The Age of Taurus, which lasted from 4400 BC to 2200 BC, ended just a couple hundred years before the labyrinth was built, according to archaeology. But if the symbol of the bull had been taken from the constellation and then placed on something spiritual, it is feasible that the many wouldn't just discard it after 2,000 years of use. I mean, we can look at the fish symbol for Jesus for evidence of that. Do you really think that Christians are going to stop using the fish when the Age of Aquarius starts? Now, we see the bull symbol used a ton in the Age of Taurus. For instance, Apis, the bull god of the Egyptians, was most popular during the Taurus Age. So one possibility is the symbol of the bull was adopted with the myth as part of the age, or perhaps a symbol was used by the Athenians to represent Minoans in a more general sense. I know, sorry, this probably comes across to many of you as some lazy archaeologist style, I'm not really sure, let's just throw something generic at it. Spiritual significance! In this case, the stars, but I do think the stars are a little bit better than just spiritual significance in general. But that's all just assuming that explanation is true. Let's look a different direction. What if the Minotaur was real? If we look at this story through the lens of ancient higher technology, then all of a sudden the account becomes more realistic. But Daedalus, that pervy old dude that made the wooden cow to facilitate the, he was considered a legendary craftsman, one worthy of the gods. He was the father to the infamous Icarus. No, not Kid Icarus. Thank you, yes, that's the one. Anyway, Icarus was known for making winged sandals that allowed him to fly, as you're probably well aware, and presumably he gained this knack of invention from his dad. Of course, most historians consider Daedalus a mythical figure, perhaps based on a real man, but clearly blown vastly out of proportion. But if he had access to higher technology than his contemporaries, like from a lost civilization, for example, he may well be remembered as somebody that could do and make anything. And in that case, the story isn't quite as gross as it was before. It's not some woman and a bull doing the nasty. It's, what would you say, genetics. Like those Anunnaki stories from ancient aliens and all that, if they were able to manipulate DNA, a man with bovine DNA is not a stretch at all. Of course, this takes on quite the assumption, and as many of you already know, I'm not really a huge fan of ancient high technology. In the case of most ancient mysteries, the way that I like to operate is to ignore the things we could achieve with more mundane means and focus on the things that I can't find an explanation for that matches the tech of the day. This is where the mysteries lie, right? But in this case, we've really only got a story. It's like there's no rocks to look at, no fancy vase, no pyramid, just a story, so you either believe it or you don't. But then why do we have a labyrinth? Well, I mentioned this in the beginning, and it is refreshingly sensible. To illustrate this, I'll just read a quote from the Minister of Culture, Lena Madoni, again. "The completion of the excavation research is considered necessary in order to clarify the character of the monument and its relationship with the residential and cult centers of the same period in the Pedaida area. The monumentality of the construction, as well as the fact that no similar one has been excavated so far, make it a landmark of the new Heraklion Airport." Now, as many of you watching are going to be well aware, the idea of fully excavating a site is something we don't see endorsed very often by archaeologists. It's something that all of us that are like really interested in the past and want to know where we came from and our history and all that, we really want to see these places fully excavated. But the professionals, not so much. I mean, Jimmy Corsetti has been hounding Lee Clare, the archaeologist in charge of Göbekli Tepe, for not excavating more and for planning to leave most of the site to be excavated by future generations. And the response by many archaeologists has been very critical, of course. They compare Göbekli Tepe to Rome and say, we usually only excavate 5% of a site anyway. This is standard operating procedure. But sites like Göbekli Tepe are similar to Papura Hill, anomalous, and therefore worthy of more investigation. Furthermore, Göbekli Tepe and Papura Hill don't have a bunch of people living on it, and last I checked, Rome's got a pretty robust population center. It's a lot easier to excavate a place like Göbekli Tepe. You don't have to say, hey man, you need to find a new home, you just go dig. I mean, I hope nobody told those cretins that they could put a big statue of a minotaur out front and make money from tourism. I mean, they are called Cretans for a reason. What do you mean that's racist? And the radar station? Relocated. At least it will be, to quote an article from the tourism website Travel Tomorrow. Nonetheless, the previously unknown monument in the path of the airport's radar tower highlights the difficulties faced by many infrastructure projects in a country with such a wealth of yet-to-be-uncovered ancient cultural treasures. An astonishing 35 other archaeological sites have been found in the airport area alone as authorities battle to connect the hub with road networks and utilities. Still, competing interests must find a way to coexist, and Culture Minister Lena Madoni, an archaeologist herself, has promised to relocate the radar tower that was destined for Papura Hill, saying, "We all understand the value and importance of cultural heritage, as well as the growth potential at stake. It's possible to go ahead with the airport while granting the antiquities the protection they merit." So the site of the radar is unannounced, but they are going to move it to protect the site, which is awesome. I mean, they have a lot of these problems on Crete. Like they said, 35 sites discovered while they were playing with this airport groundwork. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. The fact is, this is a far cry from how we see this sort of thing usually handled. The protection of the site, coupled with the opinion of the archaeologists that have control of the site, saying they want it fully excavated, makes me feel hopeful. And I hope this example is followed by many other archaeologists. You know, protect the site, excavate it as much as feasible, present the findings to the public, unadulterated. It just seems like a common sense sort of thing, you know? It's like the public wants knowledge, archaeologists want work. But what do I know? I'm just some hairy dude.
But what do I know? I'm just some bitch.
Anyway, thanks so much for watching. I just want to say real quick before I go, there's links to support the channel down below. And December 5th through 7th, just about a month from now, I'm going to be in Scottsdale, Arizona, with a bunch of people much cooler than me at the Quest for Ancient Civilizations conference. Link to purchase tickets or an online web pass is down below. Thank you very much and have a good day.